Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD, products curated for life. Don't forget, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. The baseball music in the background means we must be talking baseball. That's exactly what we're going to do. Let's bring in our good buddy, Caleb Joseph. He's on the line with us, Nashville legend, air drum, professional air drum.
Champion.
Air drum.
He's a champion.
I was going to say, what do you
he's
do
He's an
after
air drum
that?
Champion.
He's a legend.
Legend, yeah. Legendary air drummer, I guess is the best way to put it. He was also a baseball player. He's been in the bigs for a long time. He's a catcher, and he's a really good guy. I don't know about his bowling. We've been to bowling events with him. I'm not sure where he stacks up. I think he's
skeet shooting.
A little bit under 200. Is that fair to say? You're under 200, right? You're not 200 and over, are you?
Yeah, I mean, if Lauren's hard all the way to the left, I'd roll strike every time.
Uh-oh, well, hold on.
He sounds like he's 100 miles away. We got to bring him closer.
Is he back up in Canada? We can't hear him.
You can't hear me? Oh, no.
Okay, now you're coming in. Now you're coming in.
Yeah,
that's
it's
better. Sorry. Dodging thunderstorms here. Tennessee grass golf course.
Nope, we're back. To this.
Uh-oh. Put him on hold.
Near and far. We have to try this
again. The tarp has been pulled real quick.
We're going to pull the tarp real quick.
Real quick.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are under a weather delay.
Did he say he's on the golf course?
Sounds like he said he was on the golf course.
It's starting to rain here, so that's probably not a good day to be on the golf course.
Okay.
We see Efforty.
Elijah's working on this. Did you guys watch to the end last night?
I did. Yeah. I did. It was fun.
I felt for Alex Reyes, the pitcher for the Cardinals. He threw about the best slider you can throw on the first pitch to Chris Taylor. It was absolutely nasty. And then the next time he goes to the slider, it was a spinner.
That second one, when he did it and watching it go across the plate, I was like, man, he just hung one. That's not going to be good.
They call it the old cement mixer. It wasn't really breaking.
Well, let's see if Caleb is with us. Caleb, are you there?
How is that?
Yes.
Sound loud and clear.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm dodging rainstorms here at the Tennessee Grasslands Golf Course. Just got absolutely soaked, and I think I might have had a little bit of water in the microphone there. Sorry about that, boys.
Yeah, it is. It's not a great golf day, is it? I mean, I think we're supposed to dodge showers all day, right? Maybe?
Yeah, but you remember, I was up in Seattle, so I've gotten very used to this rainy everyday thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best part about that is I've got an excuse. Well, you know, I shot pretty good, but it was raining outside, so I was probably five over more than I would.
I missed your answer. We missed your answer because it was a little muffled. Bowling, you're under 200 guy or over 200 guy?
Well, I mean, I'd tell you if the boards weren't warped to the gutters every time, I'd probably be a 275 to 300 bowler. But
okay,
you know, I could keep up there with Mookie Betts. It's hit or miss. But those events with the Predators are always great.
Yeah, I would say with the guards, I'm definitely 275, 300, somewhere in that range. I'm bowling
perfect
with Maddox, and I get to use the guards too. I am spectacular.
That's right. That's exactly right.
What did you? We were just talking about Chris Taylor's home run. I think what's cool is, you know, you're always looking for ways you can incorporate that to youth sports, and it's like, hey, you know, here's a guy that didn't start the game, right? Because, you know, the early stages at, you know, 9 and 10, you're still trying to get – they're playing all the head games and all that stuff, and it's like, hey, guys, here's a reason why you don't put your head down. He didn't start. He wasn't – and then he came in, you know, defensive weapon, and then the next thing you know, hits the game-winning home run. I mean, that's why you just never know in baseball. When your number's called, you could end up being the star, and it's not like he would have ever thought that in the first inning.
You're right. So many improbable heroes in the postseason. I think that's why people love it. Think about a guy, Steve Pierce, that was kind of on nobody's radar years ago, ended up winning World Series MVP for the Red Sox, caught fire in the second half. That team, especially in the National League, and that's what you find with the Dodgers and some of these NL teams, Giants probably as well, that you have so many guys that are versatile. They have to be so versatile in the game, and they've got deep, deep depth. And so you might not see them at the start of the game because they might be playing an analytical matchup, but their bench is just as dangerous as the guys that might be starting the first four or five innings. And you know what? If you stay ready and you stay prepared and all your work is good, and you can make an impact late in the game. And that, I mean, I can't tell you how many times that actually happens, especially when the games start counting and meaning the most. You're going to depend on your 20th, 21st, all the way through 25th guy just as much as you are your star player. And so for guys playing high school, college baseball or whatever, middle school, even youngsters, I remember a story back a long time ago when I was a 12-year-old youth tournament, and I wasn't really playing. Ended up finding my way into the game around the fifth or sixth inning. Of course, you only play seven in youth ball, and ended up pitching the last two innings. We were down by five, hit a grand slam to tie it up after we had scored one run, and ended up kind of being the hero, and I didn't even play in that little bitty 12-year-old youth game. So it's prevalent in youngsters, in high school, college, and you can get on the map by being a hero if you're prepared and ready and stay in the game.
I love that story. I thought the Cardinals deserved to lose. Anytime you take out a McFarland, you deserve to lose. I mean, you stick with a McFarland, you let him get the out, and you brought up analytics, and that's probably what analytics said. In fact, I think I heard Cardinals skipper talk about it after the game, that he hits lefties well, Chris Taylor, and they took him out, made the switch, and the next thing you know, didn't matter. They bring in the righty, and he hits the two-run homer. You've dealt with analytics a lot in your career. I don't know. I know we've talked about it with you, but I don't know how exactly you feel about analytics. I think there's a whole lot of good, but there's probably a lot of pushback as well because, you know, things like, for example, you that bring to the table. You know, you are a clubhouse guy. You're a guy that you can't quantify what you're going to bring to the room. You are a guy that is good for the room. Well, I don't know if there's a number for that in analytics. I don't know if that equates anywhere. Overall, Caleb, what do you think? Is it used too much? Is it used properly? Where would you go with that in baseball?
Yeah, I think it's a case-by-case scenario, right? You have quite a few teams that are totally dependent on it and some teams that probably could catch up a little bit. I want the information. Look, we've been using numbers in the game since the inception of it. That's how you quantify people's worth and how they're doing. And you've got to have somebody at the top or hopefully near the top that is able to sift through all of the numbers because some of them are great, some of them are not so great. And just like you said, some things that the numbers can't quantify, they can't quantify experience, can't quantify heart, can't quantify desire, all these intangibles that some players bring. I mean, look, I was a teammate with TJ McFarland in Baltimore, and he's a left-handed sinker baller, you know, and a lot of these analytics, they want to chase the whiff, the swing and miss. In my opinion, if analytics had it their way, they'd only throw pitches that did not have any contact. And when you're playing defense, they don't want anybody to ever hit the ball. So what happens is you end up finding ways to usually chase whiff. If you're looking for that swing and miss, you're going to pitch into damage spots because where most guys swing and whiff the most is where they believe they can do damage. You know, nobody swings at the up and in fastball if they don't ever hit it out. They want that middle away fastball, and so that's why you can go a little bit below the zone with maybe a fastball or a slider. So I guess if you're following my logic here, sometimes you have to pitch into damage to get that whiff. TJ's got the ultimate ground ball, low damage pitch in a sinker. And the game will tell you when it's time to make a change. That's if you have any sort of experience and you've been around for a long time. The game will always dictate and tell you when to make the move. Now, so many of these clubs have everything mapped out and predetermined, and what happens is you have some of these guys that are hamstrung by what they have to do and the moves they have to make. And I have no idea if Shields hamstrung that way. It doesn't seem like the Cardinals are incredibly heavy with the analytic hand, but there are clubs that do that, and you see it night in, night out, moves that are made, and everybody in the team and the stadium is shaking their head, going, I just don't understand this. And you look at the numbers, and look, the numbers might be favorable over a career path or whatever, but the guy that you're bringing in to replace the guy that's dominating, maybe his last three outings have stunk, but his career numbers look pretty good. So analytically, that looks like a good matchup, and you can't be blamed. But the game is telling you what it wants, and too many times we veer away from that. The clubs that are blending it perfectly are usually the ones that find themselves not having to answer these type of questions. But look, we experienced this last year with Tampa Bay. You know, yep. How easily have we forgotten already yep. that Tampa Bay might have blown a World Series by being heavy analytically handed. Now they can come back and say, well, we won 100-something games this year and won the division. How do you like that? Well, at the end of the day, World Series champs is really the only barometer and measure. So we'll see what happens this year.
I have to believe, Caleb, this is it for Joe West. Cowboy Joe, I think that's his nickname. Other people have nicknames for him. I don't think we can use those on the radio. But this is it for him. I have to believe you've been behind the plate many Joe West games over the years. Do you have a Joe West story for us?
I do. I'll make it quick. Years and years ago, I was the Old Timers Banquet receiving an award, and Joe West was a keynote speaker. He came in with a jacket and started talking about how when he was coming up in the minor leagues, it was tough, making no money, and he would occasionally be asked to go speak at some of these banquets. And to try and make any sort of cash, he'd find a way to put some silverware in his pocket, take it to the local pawn shop, and try and pawn it off for a nickel or so just so he could eat breakfast the next day. So as he's telling this story, he starts to pull out a piece of silverware and sets it on the podium. Joe talks for about 40 minutes, all right? And every two or three minutes, he puts another piece, reaches into his jacket pocket, puts another piece of silverware on the podium. By the end of his talk, 30, 40 minutes, the entire podium that he is speaking at is filled with forks, knives, spoons, butter knives. And every time he reaches his hand pocket, people are just dying laughing. And so I used, that was, goodness, I mean, I was 15 or 16 years old. Fast forward almost 15 years later, my first game with Joe West, he's at home plate. And I knew, you know, Joe's pretty stern on the rookie. So I didn't want to mess it up, especially being a catcher. And I went back and told him, I said, hey, Joe, years and years ago, you spoke in Nashville, Tennessee, and you started putting silverware on the podium there. And everybody was dying laughing. It was a great story. I'll never forget it. And he comes, he's at home plate with all four of his buddies. We had just gotten done with the national anthem. And he goes, boys, I've been telling you that story for 5 years. I told you it was true, and this guy just confirmed it. So from then on out, Joe West, I had him in my back pocket. And every time I saw him, I'd reach into my pocket and act like I was putting a piece of silverware out. He would just chuckle. And so I was very, very fortunate to have that story, or else might have a different story about Joe punching me on a pitch 9 inches outside.
Caleb Joseph is with us. We're talking baseball here. So, Caleb, I want to ask you, do you think you could be a good third base coach? I feel for Phil Nevin because he is now the whole offseason, I'm sure he's going to be second-guessing himself, losing sleep, all of the above. He gets hammered for the decision that he made to send Aaron Judge and sort of the biggest moment of the game in the wild card game at Fenway.
Oh, yeah. It's a thankless job. You're expected to do a perfect job, and your screw-ups are completely magnified. It's almost like umpiring, really. Great umpires rarely get noticed or acknowledged, but when they screw it up, boy, I tell you, people come down with a heavy hammer, and rightfully so. But we've had a number of sins or no sins during our year this year, and I'm thinking I really would not want that job. I really wouldn't, because, again, like I said, you can only be blamed. And to make a very, very, very split-second decision, you're trying to play those plays out before it happens, speed of the runner, wherever he is, the arm strength of the outfielder, the cutoff man, the ability of a catcher to pick a ball, the conditions of the field, score of the game. All these things are happening in literally a blip of a second. So there is absolutely no chance I would ever want that job, unless they wanted to add a couple zeros to the end of the paycheck.
Then you'd endure it.
I could buy Predator season tickets in perpetuity. Then I might have to consider it, but no, very tough job, and I feel for the guy. And you feel for guys, too, when they're on third base, and you're going, oh, man, this guy's going to get hammered. And sure enough, they do.
What was the rule of thumb when you were playing at Fenway on balls going off the monster? Because that was a huge factor on that play, and Kike Hernandez is given a lot of credit, as he should, for coming over to play the angle perfectly. But I'm thinking, like, what did you guys go over? Hey, guys, when you're on second, you're running the bases, pick up the third base coach when you get the funky bounces off the monster.
Yeah, the biggest thing in baseball is, especially that was stressed to me with Buck Showalter in Baltimore, whom I deem one of the greatest fundamental coaches of all time, do not make that third base coach hold you or not hold you because he's not sure if you want to score. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Get after it with a head full of steam and make him stop you. And there is a distinct difference when you're watching a guy run the bases like his hair's on fire and he is desperately trying to score versus the hesitation of,
you're not going to send me, are you? Yeah.
Yeah, chopping your steps, making sure that you're hitting it on the right angle, and then picking up the coach late and all of these things. Just get after it. And one of the biggest things I see is guys running with their head down. I mean, you have to anticipate that everything that happens in the game, you have to anticipate it. You have to be playing the next play, which is what I learned from Jeff Forehand over at Lipscomb. You have to play the next play. Anticipate that ball is going off the wall as soon as it leaves the bat, and you are desperately trying to score home. And that's when it becomes a little bit easier. And I can't get inside the brain of the runner if that was the case in Boston, but those things usually make it easier for third base coaches to let you go or to hold you up.
It is funny how Fenway affects the game. The two balls that Stanton hit, well, he hits three, and at a different park, it would have been completely flipped, right? The two that he hits off the top of the wall are probably gone at virtually any other baseball stadium in America, and then the one he actually slices inside the pesky pole probably would not have been a home run.
Oh, yeah. Fenway sucks. I mean, it really does. People, oh, my goodness, you know, when I was playing in the AL East, you get to play at Yankee Stadium and Fenway Park, you know, before the games. Welcome to Fenway Park, America's most beloved ballpark. And I'm going, there's nothing beloved about this place at all. Like, nothing. It's funky. Like, it's like somebody came in that had a late night the night before and designed this field. There's not, like, get out of town. Who would put a wall and then this crazy long right center angle and then the weird bullpens and then, oh, let's wrap it all the way around and call it Pesky's Hole. Like, who thinks of this? Like, somebody was drunk when they decided to design that. And it's a headache. And it is an absolute headache. And I'll tell you, I will say, though, I've been fortunate in my career to hit one over the monster and around Pesky's pole. I got a 97-mile-an-hour fastball from Joe Kelly outside. I squared it up. I looked to left field. I thought it was going to left field over the monster, and sure enough, it was almost behind me when I hit it, and it was curving towards Pesky's pole. And Shane Victorino leaped in, and halfway into the stands, ball in his glove, and as soon as he hit the wall around his waist, he dumped it right inside of Pesky's pole. It was the shortest homer of the season that year. I think that was 15, maybe, at 302 feet.
302. You got to love it.
That's right.
So,
just like high school baseball.
Caleb, last year we were talking to you during the postseason. We had to endure the entire postseason in the neutral fields. You know, they started to sprinkle in the fans at the end. But one thing that has been apparent for all of us that watched the two wild card games, first of all, the intensity of winner take all is definitely, you feel that, but also the crowds at both. Isn't it nice to have that reaction of the crowd? You played in some postseasons where you had that kind of thing. I remember talking to you when you were with the Orioles and you guys were making your little run. It's just, you can't beat that.
Cannot beat it. And the players are so thankful and they feed so much off the energy of the crowd. And quite honestly, it's amazing playing at home in the playoffs in front of your home crowd, but it's just as good playing on the road, especially when you win an entire season with no fans. The Mariners, I was with the Mariners this year, and they were half a game out going into kind of the last series, and there was 45,000 fans there. They sold out three games in a row. And
that was pretty cool.
I
love when a team goes on a late run like that and the fever catches. That was really cool.
You're right. We'd been hanging in there all season, and those players were just so energized, and the city was so energized, and it was just good to see. It was good to feel that baseball was fully back, and to see some of this stuff in the playoffs. People are just excited, and it just shows you how important sport is just to the American fan. I can't wait to get to Bridgestone. That's all I've been thinking about. I'm so sick and tired of watching those games with the cardboard cutouts, and they did the best they could during the season, but I can't wait, and I'm sure those players are thinking the same thing, but there's nothing like the crack of the bat and the roar and the anticipation of a play happening right in front of your eyes at a baseball game. during the playoffs. And I tell you, it is the fans are the ones that make that happen, and they deserve so much credit. And we can't, as players, cannot thank them enough for showing up and supporting the game that we love.
Talking to Caleb Joseph, longtime Major League Baseball catcher and Nashville native. So last night during the wild card game, you know, Yadier Molina is on the plate or behind the plate, and you know, one of the best in the game for sure in his era and in all time. But Bellinger gets on base. I know it. Everybody else knows it. Yadi knows it, that he's going to try and steal on him. And it was just one of those weird plays on the transfer where he can't quite get the grip to make the play, and so Bellinger gets the stolen base. But when you're in that situation behind the plate where you know, like, it's coming, like, what's going through your mind? How much are you really thinking in that moment?
Oh, man, I was so fortunate. One of the coolest plays I've ever made was in the 2014 playoff run we had. We were playing against the Kansas City Royals, and Gerard Dyson was just a madman on the bases that year. And we had, as an Orioles catching corps, we had done such a great job of throwing guys out, and they had done such a good job of stealing bases. And so it had become part of a storyline. It was like a story. People loved it, that, man, we can't wait to see these guys try and steal off guys that can really throw. And sure enough, two games into it, they pinch run Gerard Dyson at first base in like the seventh inning. And everybody in the entire world knows what's coming. And I'm behind home plate. And I'm just, honestly, you kind of go numb. When you're playing, you kind of go numb just knowing the task at hand and knowing what you have to do. And you're trying your best to slow your adrenaline down. You're just trying to slow it down because it is happening so fast, and you can't prepare for that moment. You can't. You can try as best as you please to ramp up that type of intensity, but you can't measure adrenaline, and it's really hard to replicate. And so I was fortunate to just be able to have a perfect transfer, a great throw, and an unbelievable tag by J.J. Hardy. But that's all I was really thinking was just try and do it in slow motion, because I know I'm going to be amped up, and if I don't try to slow down a bit, I'm going to be completely out of control, and I might bottle that transfer. And if you don't get the transfer down, it truly doesn't matter. It's over. So he is one of the greatest, and he has thrown out, goodness, hundreds of guys stealing bases, and he's done it in the playoffs. He's won World Series, Gold Gloves, all this, and just some of those things that you a lot of it depends on the action you get from the pitcher. If the pitcher gives you a bit of a chance, you feel like you can slow down even more. But if you feel like you've got a rush, the first thing to go usually is a transfer. And if your transfer is not any good and you don't have a great grip on the ball can go anywhere, up, down, left, right. But most importantly, you've got to actually get it to the throwing hand. And so that's tough to see because he's one of the best. And, you know, they used to say one of the coolest moments in baseball was the stolen base, right?
Yeah.
The analytics want it to be a home run, but there's such a great anticipation of a guy stealing a base. And so it's funny how the game sort of changes in the playoffs, right? Kind of runs are at a premium, and those type of things make such a huge difference when, all you read in July and August is stolen bases are at a all-time low for the game of baseball. And then as soon as games actually matter, you start doing the little things to win the game. I don't want to jump back on that analytic bandwagon, but it's the team that's going to figure this out, to blend it and really blend it perfectly, they're going to be able to corner the market, I believe.
So
who's the closest to that, in your opinion?
Oh, man.
I know that's kind of putting you on the spot.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Cardinals have historically done it really well. I know the Rays are really, really analytically driven. The Angels with Madden, he's got quite a bit of leeway. The Yankees seem to be heavy, heavy analytically held, which is some of the questions, you know, Boone might have to face. More about the offense, but you're talking about it's just slowly taken over. And, I mean, look at the Giants. And that's the problem. The problem is the Giants come out of nowhere and they catch fire, and everybody's going to say, well, it's because of their analytic department, because they got that new guy. Can't remember how to pronounce his name, but that's the only reason. Well, they've got a lot of really good players. I mean, Crawford, Posey, Belt, they added some really key pieces. And so there's this tug of war that's going on right now. But I'm interested to see who San Diego hires. That's going to be interesting because they got quite a few players, and they seem to be on that road of trying to blend it. And I know it didn't work out at all this year, but I'm interested to see who gets the job there.
So what's next for you as we wrap this up?
What's going on? I'm strapping the skates on, and I'm going to spend 2 or 3 years training and try out for the National Predators.
All right. Awesome.
I like that.
Awesome.
No, I don't know. It's probably at that point where it's time to really reconsider where we're at. I probably would like to entertain something having to do with maybe TV or radio with some of these clubs. I've had a couple of inquiries about that, and that's fun and interesting. I've probably got a couple of coaching gigs that are going to open up. But with a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, it's you guys know how it is. It's tough being away 200 days a year. So having the flexibility of maybe being able to stay in the game and work 80 to 100 games and be home for majority of the season is quite appealing to me, especially now that I've got a little boy that's playing baseball. I mean, I missed every single football game this year, and that just killed me. Killed me.
It's so brutal.
I want to be there for him, and so we'll see. But I'd like to stay in the game. I really love baseball and just everything that it's been able to provide for me. And it's the most beautiful game on earth.
Wish we had a team here, Caleb. You'd be a no-brainer to do that.
That's right. That's right.
Maybe someday we can dream.
Maybe.
I think.
Play the long game.
Do you hear anything about that? You got any news you could share with us on that front?
Say that again.
Have you heard anything? I mean, you're in the baseball circles. I mean, do people really talk about this actually happening someday, Nashville, or is it just a big pipe dream?
I want to believe it, and I really do. I for every person that says it's going to happen, there's another person that says, nope, this is baloney.
Yeah.
And
that's our vibe. Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's killing me. It's absolutely killing me. I mean, I talked to a clubhouse guy in Oakland, knowing that that's probably unrealistic because it's so far away and it would change the dynamic of the travel in that league. But they've been trying to get a new stadium there in Oakland for how long? In Tampa? I mean, Montreal? Are you kidding me? Nashville would be absolutely perfect for Tampa in terms of the travel. It'd move everything a little bit more north. Tampa seems like the most realistic team to relocate, in my opinion. But if you're going to add a team, you're going to have to add two teams. Then you have unequal divisions. It's an absolute mess. But they would support it. I totally believe that Nashville would support a baseball team and do a heck of a job. There's so many people that grow up here that are either Cardinals fans, Braves fans, because all they have is the Sounds, and they want to cheer for a specific team. And the market's huge now. It's growing more than ever. We have things like traffic now, which I absolutely hate, but with that comes more people. And so I hope it happens, and if it does, oh my goodness, I'll sign up to do anything. I'll be the clubhouse kid hanging jock straps and shining shoes all day. I'll do it.
Yep. Dragging the field, you get it, driving the John Deere, dragging the infield.
Whatever it takes.
Hey, we appreciate you taking.
I might even try and suit up for him,
Oh yeah,
I love it.
Bullpen catcher.
Hey, we thank you for your time, sacrificing a little golf time. We appreciate it as always. We'll check in with you here soon. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, you got it. Have a blast. Thanks, guys.
Caleb Joseph, he is a gem for sure. Love talking with him, and we appreciate his time.
Yeah,
we'll come
good.
Back. We'll wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next.